have you read the, or heard about this book, The Starfish and the Spider? So talking about decentralized organizations and how they kind of just win almost in an evolutionary kind of way. And an example that stayed with me was the concept of Alcoholics Anonymous and AA. So essentially that was like a model and a format that was created. There was a creator of it, right? Who developed it. And then essentially it's an open source thing. Like anyone, the whole idea is that anyone can spring up their own meeting and it sort of populates like this. And so like when you open up things, there's a way that it spreads compared to you have a centralized entity like a spider with a little like, it's kind of, it doesn't flow in the same way. I think that's what we're seeing across like the on-chain ecosystem in general. I'm not surprised that it's accelerating and seems to be winning because it just makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. I do think that that decentralization and that freedom, that open source movement is so much more promising than any of the closed alternatives that you see in traditional media and traditional finance. And that's what gets me super excited is when you see a Farcaster, which is like deliberately making everything open and being like, you know, come at me, bro. Like if you think you can do it better, you know, here's the social graph. You think you can build a better Warpcast? I hope you can, you know, go for it. And just like, I mean, those companies just win. They just do.
Yo, grab your headphones, get ready to roll. Zero bar coming at you, taking control. We talking about now, NFTs and Web3. Doing it big, bringing the knowledge for free. We're here, game is the game, we breaking all the chains. Open source, public goods, it's a whole new terrain. Educate, elevate, empower the crew. Zero bar revolution, we coming for you.
Welcome back to another episode of Zero Pod, a CC0 video podcast about enjoying Ethereum, enjoying nouns, and living that on-chain life. I'm Tody Hawk from the Noun Square On-Chain Media Collective, and I'm excited to welcome our guest this week, Mr. Nick Collins, founder of the UFO On-Chain Radio Club. And because Nick has an amazing podcast of his own, we decided to do something a little different here this week. I'll interview him, and next week he'll put me in the hot seat, like a little on-chain podcast foreign exchange program. You love to see it. So welcome to Zero Rights Reserve Podcast, Nick. So glad to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Really cool to be here. The idea of like the home and away games for podcasts.
That's right.
It's always fun. And of course, like dig what you guys are doing and what's happening with Yellow and all this kind of thing. It's rare. I've only been on a couple of other people's podcasts before. So I'm very much more used to not talking very much and asking questions. So,
it's really different too, because I host a lot of Twitter spaces in addition to the podcast. And anytime that I've been invited on another Twitter spaces, I've always found it super weird. For some reason, I can talk for like 2 hours as the host of a space. But the moment you put me in the hot seat, it's just different somehow. It's like, oh,
yeah,
you lose all control. I don't like this. If this is home and away, though, I got my yellow, based in yellow, sweater on, so next week I'll have to wear my super base hoodie, my away jersey.
Yeah, nice.
When I'm on your pod. Awesome. Well, one thing we like to do here on Zero Pod is always kind of start from a personal perspective. It's always important to me anyway to hear about the people behind the projects, and I'd love to hear your story a little bit about how, you know, how you got started, what your background is, and a little bit about your crypto journey if you'd like to share.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm based in Amsterdam these days. Like I moved out here about 6 months ago, and I come from Australia in Sydney. And for the last bunch of years, like I've been living in a place called Byron Bay, which is like an amazing surf town over there, but very much like a very tiny, tiny surf place, forests and farmland and all this kind of thing. And now, you know, we're back in the city. But like spiraling back to background stuff, like I started out like in the music scene in Sydney. I have a background in media and journalism and things like that. And I started out in radio straight from the jump. So way back in like 2007, when I was still at university there. And so I did radio for a bunch of years, also playing in bands, doing stuff in the music space, ended up like starting to be a music programmer at the station as well. And like booking a venue and collaborating with festivals and all that kind of good stuff. And shout out to FBI Radio, which is like a place I was at. It's like, you know, every city kind of has their amazing independent station that sort of becomes this incredible home for all the people that are creating culture and events and, you know, art and everything that's happening in a city. So like experiencing that for years is kind of that in combination with being part of the music scene and all that kind of thing. And so I've found like now that we're here in the crypto space and everything's happening in these like on-chain realms and things, those experiences with something like FBI has kind of been really inspiring or guiding in ways. Yeah, so like I'd done all this music and radio and media stuff and then got into crypto in like 2017. It was the same time like we moved out of Sydney up to Byron Bay. And at that time, like I just got completely involved and interested in the space. And the first thing I did was like create a podcast in like the start of 2018. Started going to a few like blockchain weeks and hackathons and stuff and went to like...
So you were actually early.
Yeah, at this point. But at the time, it's crazy. Like you felt it was kind of your years behind all the like the true like OGs, builders of Bitcoin.
Many such cases. Goes to show you, it doesn't matter when you get here. There's always going to be a lot of OGs who are, you know, paving the way before you.
Yeah, definitely true. So I was showing up in like April 2018 at like Ethereal Summit and New York Blockchain Week and stuff, and just, you know, consensus of putting on Ethereal Summit. So all the many, many projects and things that were incubated and built out of there. I think CryptoPunks were minting at the time. I didn't know, unfortunately. I didn't pick up on that piece or whatever.
I should do a supercut. Yeah. I should do a supercut of all of our guests talking about how they were in crypto but didn't mint CryptoPunks. I could probably do a pretty like nice supercut.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. It would be nice. It'd be cool. But yeah, so like 2018 and 19 and sort of, you know, starting out with a podcast, I started like recording with founders and things. And like, it's a great way to kind of just ask questions and kind of, as you learn about stuff, share it with the audience at the same time and kind of follow along. So did that for a while. And then, you know, 2019 Berlin Blockchain Week in sort of, what was that, September or something? And that was like the last thing overseas that I did before like the world lockdown, 2020 through 22. And so I was back in Australia through that whole period. It was also when all this, you know, experimentation around, you know, DAOs and NFTs were exploding and all this kind of stuff was happening. It was also like a brutal bear market and stuff. So it was kind of, you know, being full time in the space was a pretty insane thing to be doing. And many people were doing it. And then I think it was 21, was like creative lead at 0x Labs and got to work with their team for a year there, which was amazing as well. I'm working on like Matcha and all that kind of stuff. So learning more about...
We've got a little something brewing with Matcha right now, actually. Matcha, okay. Matcha X, Nouns Esports, X, the Noun Square.
Shout out for 0x Labs and Matcha. Yeah. And and then like I left 0x in sort of late... 22, I think it was, and that was around the time that the country kind of finally opened up in Australia and we could kind of get out. So we came over to Europe for like
freedom.
3 months. Yeah, we got straight out. We came over here, I should backtrack a little bit. So during this like 2020-21 time, I was also like collaborating and building with my friend Ivano Salonia, who now like we've created UFO together, and we have our like creative studio with Apollo and stuff like that. But we became friends like really coincidentally through being put together on this project. So it was Circular Fashion Summit for Paris Fashion Week. So it became basically like doing a fashion summit in virtual reality. So every other event was canceled for COVID, of course. So this became the only event for Paris Fashion Week. So I met Ivano because he'd been working even at that time for like 5 years or so in like extended realities and VR and all this crazy stuff. And so as part of that event, it was like recreating the Grand Palais in Paris in a virtual environment, posting out like headsets to over 300 people who were like, you know, the founders and directors of all the, you know, fashion giant companies and all that kind of stuff. And then for like a 3-day summit, we're basically in virtual reality, pushing like 6 to 8 hours a day with these like hot headsets and everything. But so surreal because you're there in the Grand Palais. It was like taking all this 3D and map it out in an environment. And then it was like shipped in old space VR on these like old Oculus Go headsets or whatever. But like so surreal that, you know, the first time that I was meeting Ivano, like we're hanging out in VR space VR? and whatever. And we ended up like after that whole project, then, you know, we're just like exploring together what was happening with, you know, NFTs and DAOs and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we created like an artist collective called Voyager. We're jamming on ideas with that for a while as well. And then when it got up to like 22 and we came over to Europe, and it was the first like international crypto event I've been to for quite a while. It was like ETH Barcelona in July. Met a few like amazing friends there. Io, aka Arena, who's like a contributor at UFO and a great friend of ours, and also Peace Node and many other people around the industry that I'd known but hadn't seen in person for a very long time. And everyone was there kind of saying the same thing, like, oh, I've been stuck back in my home country all this time. So yeah, it was straight after the time in Europe. I got back to Australia in September, and then we launched UFO at the end of September with the first episode. So that's a podcast that I host.
Tell us a little bit about UFO. That's probably where a lot of people know you from. Sure. I'm an avid listener. I love the pod. I think you guys do a great job of digging in and getting deep on subjects, which I think is really rare. But for someone who's listening in who maybe doesn't know about UFO, they're about to discover their next favorite podcast, which is exciting. Tell them a little bit about UFO and, you know, where's the name come from and sort of what's the driving purpose behind UFO?
Yeah, thanks, man. So like the initial inspiration was like the UFO Club was a short-lived venue, legendary thing from London in the mid-60s. It was founded by people who were connected with the guys who did like the Indica Gallery and Bookstore, International Times, which was this like independent magazine that actually inspired the creation of Rolling Stone magazine, because Jan Wenner was out in London and then went home, San Francisco, and made Rolling Stone and stuff. So it was that whole kind of collective, like, you know, that's the gallery where John Lennon meets Yoko and stuff, and they're really good mates with the Beatles and tight with Paul McCartney and all that stuff. And among that group, they're like, they were there in Abbey Road, like holding little pencils while tape loops are spinning around for Tomorrow Never Knows. Like, that's a really crazy kind of connection to all that. And we just seen, like, you know, essentially we heard about it by discovering things on the internet of like these amazing like event posters and stuff for UFO and these amazing like print ads that were in the International Times, like street press and whatever, about these like mysterious happenings and stuff like that. So we kind of resonated with that of like, well, wouldn't it be amazing to hang out at the UFO Club and the people that you would meet there? And it also resonated with our sense of creating like a counterculture network and things like that.
I like that. So, yeah, I didn't know like, about that back lore. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of like where it came from. And like, yeah, I mean, like that was the genesis for the name. But then going live, like the intention for the show was, you know, talking with interesting people in the space who are working on various projects. And it's artists and musicians and founders and builders and activists and journalists and all kinds of people. We started out with the first episode was with a mate, Charlie Waterhouse, who was like one of the founding members of Extinction Rebellion and designed their flag and stuff like that. So we've got to know like that crew in London and stuff as well, who are, once this goes to air, I believe, Hard Art is like releasing a whole new big thing with Meta Label. Because we recently went, they did a thing called Fate of Britain in Manchester like 3 weeks ago or something. And it was a huge event at like Factory International, where Grenada TV used to be. I also ran into a friend, Austin Roby from Meta Label was there as well. Got to meet and hang out with him in person, which was really nice. And yeah, so it's kind of, I think we come with a bit of that rebel energy and we have a bit of connection to people in those realms, also in art and music and stuff. And then also definitely in the sort of what I consider to be like a counterculture movement of like on-chain tech and all this stuff that people are building and is accelerating. And you see it on Zora and Farcaster and all these kinds of places.
Talk to me a little bit about that tension between, regular distribution and on-chain distribution, because I know it's something that, you know, we're constantly thinking about, and I'm sure you are too. How do you sort of walk the line between wanting to get your content out to as many people as possible and also wanting to be, you know, at the forefront of on-chain distribution?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like for the podcast, at least it goes out on Apple and Spotify and all those places. But I mean, that's kind of happening on autopilot. And to whatever extent, it's like, how do you optimize for distribution on those things? And it's usually like corporate deals and whatever is the podcast that gets surfaced the most in those places. We pretty much focus like on-chain first with everything that we're doing and experimenting with stuff. And so, yeah, it was kind of a crazy story. Because, I mean, for one thing, creating a, as you know, from like all the like the media building and stuff that you guys have been doing, it's like going from zero audience to some audience, like that kind of cold start is a real tricky part. And we caught like a bunch of tailwinds by the fact that we went live with a mirror blog. So this is September 22. So the first thing was doing, okay, every episode gets its own like blog post. We're creating unique posters for each one, and they can be, again, like inspired by the UFO Club and the geek poster kind of event vibe to it. So, and they can be collectible and things like that. So we launched on Mirror and Lens Protocol straight from the jump, most prominently. And essentially like reached a really large audience really quickly, or at least, you know, to whatever extent, a bunch of people that were collecting the Mirror posts like crazy. It was kind of like what you see now with like large Zora mints and stuff was happening just with those blog posts and stuff like that. And it kind of went really quickly on Lens as well. And then on Twitter, and just sort of bouncing those different things off each other. And we've kind of continued experimenting with things like that and just plugging things in a modular kind of way. So being in the loop with Zora and their network going live in June 23, we were the first podcast to go live on chain, basically like on launch day with Zora.
Yeah, you guys were a big inspiration for us actually to start putting our podcasts on chain. So,
oh, amazing!
I don't know if you knew that, but Jacob reached out to us and said,
"Hey, I did
not
know that."
Yeah, Jacob reached out to me and he's like, "Hey, check out UFO. Look at what they're doing. You should be doing the same for ZeroPod." And you know, that was actually my first experience with UFO. I listened to a bunch of episodes and I was like, "Yeah, we definitely should be doing this." And I said, I don't know what you were doing for like length of video before that, but I definitely like bugged Jacob a lot about making it easier to deal with bigger files. And I'm sure you have too. And they've been great in terms of like helping us figure out, you know, how do you get these giant files as small as possible? And then how do you like wrangle IPFS to actually work most of the time? But yeah, that was a big inspo for us.
Oh, that's really cool to hear. Like, yeah, it's been like a huge gift to collaborate with Zora quite a bit and stuff. And, you know, what do you call it? Like a bit of tech support from them at times when we're trying to do different things. We're like, hey, is this a thing? Like if we did this, does that even make sense or whatever? And it was definitely,
we just had Jacob on the pod. It's actually the one that's at the time of recording, it's the one that's live right now. And at the very start of the pod, I apologized to him and Joe for like just constantly bug reporting in the chat that we have. But I mean, whenever you're doing like new things and trying new things in the arena, you're always going to be that annoying person that finds all the bugs. So I'm always like self-conscious about it. It happens to me on Farcaster too. And I'm like, oh, you know, Jacob and DWR probably hate me because I'm constantly with the bug reports, but I guess they need it, right?
I think that's a big reason why like Farcaster is winning and doing so well. It's just like this crazy, you know, frenetic network of people that are just sort of testing all the surface areas and finding stuff, building stuff like way faster than you can think about. But wasn't going to say, I mean, we'd had the idea of like, we want to do the podcast on chain from the jump. And actually from before the first episode went live, we're like, we're building an on-chain radio station. Like that was what we were setting out to do, but we didn't announce that until after ETH Tokyo last year. Yeah, so shout out to Yuri as well, who was at Zora at the time as well, doing amazing things. We basically like talked it out with them, and then it was like, I'm trying to think. Like, it was basically they were deploying Zora Network, but also doing neat stuff with 1155 contracts. So then you can create your contract address for your whole podcast series, and every token is an episode.
Yeah, that's what we do as well, and it's so awesome. Like, it's just so great to be able to look at the whole collection as one opus, you know?
Yeah, totally. And then it's magic then, because then if people are collecting them or minting with comment and all this kind of stuff, like we consider everything that happens on chain to be a broadcast event. Like when it happens, like I mint something that goes out to my whole network. Like that's the game. That's like getting out of, you know, centralized social algorithms and all that shit, to we're picking up signals from each other and who is in our social graph and whatnot. And so that's really, there's so many characteristics to someone minting and, you know, collecting, holding like a podcast NFT, and then how that can become like an addressable audience in interesting ways. And we've only just started to kind of build in that direction. When we really do the radio station, it can take on a whole different form. But yeah, I think it's a super effective way to do distribution. And of course, it shows up on all the apps like Interface and all those things as well. Like, just, you can subscribe to these things and essentially, yeah, they're like dropping into your wallet and things like that. We're doing something with Hypersub.
Okay, amazing. We're looking into Hypersub right now too for Yellow. So I think Hypersub is super exciting.
Nice. Yeah. So we recently launched a thing called the UFO Network Pass with Hypersub. And so like a big part of the story with UFO as on-chain radio station and this network is that people that have been like guests on my show, friends, collaborators in the space that we're building with and whatnot are being onboarded into the network like by invitation. So we created like, I met like Johnny and the Hypersub team maybe a couple months ago, jamming on ideas. We're like, well, something that'd be really great is like, we can have this thing as, you know, if you're holding the token, then that can get you certain like create access or broadcast access on the UFO website and stuff. And we did something that hadn't been done before on Hypersub because we wanted it to be free and also not available to mint. So there was a way to do that with them that was basically, you make it not available to mint and you kind of like pre-create a certain number of tokens and then you can grant them to people.
Right.
And that's extra cool because now you can go on the Network Pass page and see everybody who's actually in the network, which before no one had any idea, but we're kind of talking about it.
That's interesting. You know,
there's a Farcaster group chat for the UFO network and stuff. And another thing we're doing now is spinning up like a team of contributors for the UFO newsletter from within that network of people. So that's really cool. Excited about that too. So it's just going to more and more becoming this like collaborative output of different people, different podcasts joining and doing more and more stuff with music over the coming months as well.
That's really cool. When we had Jacob on the pod, I asked him for some of his insights about like, what's the future basically for on-chain creators. And one of the things he mentioned is that he'd love to see communities being able to contribute to channels in certain ways. Like maybe someone can submit a podcast to the UFO network and then there could be some sort of like, you know, quorum of members that accept a piece or something like that. That would be really interesting to see play out. Sounds like you're kind of touching on some of those themes now.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, having done like over 50 episodes and talking with so many people that have, you know, over the run of the show of a year and a half or whatever it is, have done like all this various like amazing stuff and come from any like creative collectives or various projects or product teams or on and on. And so, you know, it feels like if we imagine like UFO is a radio station like FBI, imagine it's a physical building. And, you know, the way that works is there's maybe 100 contributors and DJs and presenters who are part of the station. And everybody has, maybe you have like 2 hours from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday nights or something. And that's your slot. So now that we're building with all this like on-chain kind of stuff and how you can like bring these networks in together, it's like people are releasing their stuff on-chain or potentially going live. But doing it by token access is the equivalent of in a physical place. You're like, right, you come in on Tuesday or whatever. But now we can just do different stuff that people can broadcast and it just comes through the shared signal. Like that's the real knockout idea, is it becomes a collective signal of all these different amazing projects and collectives and communities all across the ecosystem and growing out. And so that's kind of works great for audiences to discover a bunch of stuff. But also to kind of create this like collective signal between all these different projects and stuff. So we've, you know, that's how you build something like this. It becomes a bit of a thing and like, you know, amazing examples of things like this historically, would be like NCS Radio, Boiler Room, Lot Radio, like all these amazing places. And you know,
like public access too is kind of like that vibe. You know, it's like it's like you know, you're not entitled to a show on prime time, but if you show up at 3 a.m. at X Studio, you can have it. You can do your puppet show, and you know, we have to let you film something like this. You know,
Yeah, but then I'm thinking of it now, like even from like the audience side of things, like essentially you could jump on UFO and kind of program it how you like it. You know what I mean? Like I could imagine that. I think there is a magic about like the synchronous signal. So we're intending to have like a talk side, which is podcasts and stuff. And then we have music happening and potentially that's a couple different channels. But just the fact that you can be like, you know, I don't know, Light has a podcast on at 7:00. You can listen live, even though it's a podcast. Like we all listen to this stuff asynchronously. We watch Netflix at different times or whatever. But like the magic of radio is it's happening live now, and doing it on the internet makes it even more powerful. And then you can have, you know, Unlonely and people like that are doing this now. You know, they're like Unlonely's doing like TV shows and stuff, but people being able to like jump live in the chat, see who's minting, building various social graphs and interactions. Maybe if I'm, you know, I like a piece of on-chain music on UFO and I'm listening to it a bit and I collect it, then I can be, you know, onboarded into that artist's like channel on Farcast or stuff like that. Like all these things can kind of flow together.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and we've kind of sort of stumbled into it, so let's keep going down this rabbit hole. I'd love to ask you about discoverability, because I think that's a big challenge for like the next chapter of on-chain media's growth, is how do people actually find your content? And it's different, I think, than Web 2, you know, the old style where it was all about push distribution and like how far out could you get your information to, you know, throw it against the wall and see what sticks. And I feel like talking to Jacob and talking to others like yourself in the industry, a lot of us share the thought that it's more about how do people find the things we are making, because the things we're making are on chain, so they don't need to go anywhere. You know what I mean? When you put this pod, when I put this podcast on Zori, it's there. And when we do your pod next week, it'll be on your feed in, as an 1155, and it's there. So how do we find the people to come and come to it, like come to it and feed? That's my
totally
question.
A couple of things pop to mind. Like one is just trying to get like the biggest broadcast signal possible or whatever. And I think collaboration between people like we're doing right now, and projects collaborating is a great way to kind of share these audiences and stuff. I guess ultimately everyone who's here right now in this kind of crypto space is a, you know, super tiny subset of like total internet users or people who are out there. So the kind of addressable audience for the moment is quite small, but I think like experiments that are going on now, like I jumped into and joined the Higher Collective in recent days. Like I'm a huge fan in general of what Light is doing, and we're friends.
That's why I'm wearing my Higher Noggles today.
Oh, nice, nice.
My green Higher Noggles.
So that kind of stuff and various other people like doing interesting projects, like the conversations going on in Higher Collective at the moment and in UFO and other places, I'm sure, is like, okay, cool. Like you can, for instance, like you can release stuff through your own Zora profile, but you can create like splits. So we can release something, as we've been doing in the last couple of days, kind of just for fun. We put out like another cool looking like video loop of like a higher arrow in 3D in the sky or whatever. We release that on Zora and then like split half of it to of any mints back to Higher Collective. Also, thanks to Zora yesterday, you can now mint in any of these
new cool
tokens and stuff. So we can make a thing just for fun that's for Higher, and you mint it in the Higher token if you want or whatever, like just as an experiment. But anyway, I think all this type of thing can create this like social graph of discoverability and what's out there. So. And as you said before, because everything's on chain, it's just more and more exploration in the design space of like how it's surfaced and kind of, you know, referenced from your social graph. So something like an interface or a surreal or how things come through on Farcaster or, you know, just people building front ends on top of what's happening here. And for our part, like what we're building, we'd say the UFO network pass for one thing, it's like you'll be able to go on there as a listener or community member. And, you know, Network Pass members can have a little profile there that's clickable. It shows you them on, you know, Zora and Farcaster and Paragraph or wherever they're publishing. And you can kind of start to ping it together. So it's a bit like a blog network, almost like a Tumblr kind of thing. That's how I imagine like this, the discoverability. And then what happens when you start to open up the space, not only for people to kind of like replicate the kinds of tooling that UFO is using to spin out and do whatever they want of their own thing. It's like looking at ways that people can show up and say, release music through UFO or whatnot? Or how can we design for the types of profile that you can also assemble on there? Which I think would be super nice. So there's something like NTS radio has like, or most radio stations have like supporter pass. Like back at FBI in Sydney, it was like, you know, it's like $10 a month. They send you a sticker to put on the back of your car window when you're driving around, so you see everybody that's into good music and likes FBI and stuff. Yeah. So I think it's a bit of that, but it's like
social signaling a little bit.
Yeah, but it's like most radio stations. I mean, the NTS website is phenomenal, but like most of them, or all of them, like there's a whole different game that you can play if it's an on-chain radio station and people are showing up, leaving comments, meet with comment, blah blah blah. You can have, you know, leaderboards of collects or all this different kind of stuff going on. So I think ideally it'll be not only like the people that are here and a part of the network and are contributing and doing stuff, and that group will grow over time. It's also like, how do these other groups, if someone like, I'm really down with this radio station, and essentially you can, you know, create or, you know, have your profile discoverable, just like, you know, forum culture back in, say, the late 90s or early 2000s and stuff, you know?
Yeah, or even the Reddit culture that came after it.
Yeah. Exactly. So a bit of that forum culture, like, I have really clear memories about there was a music publication in Australia called Mess and Noise from, say, the mid-2000s through to, like, 2015 or something. And rather than using various social networks, like, the music community just hung out on the Mess and Noise site. So they'd post a review of a new record or something from some band that everyone likes, and everyone's jumping in the comments, leaving what they, you know, their thoughts on the record and all this kind of stuff. So people were hanging out in there. And so something like that would not be bad. I think I'd be quite interested in exploring that.
Yeah. I mean, I think to some extent, Farcaster channels have the possibility to become that, I think, in a lot of ways, because it is almost like, you know, subreddit 2.0, where you actually are coming into a subreddit with your social graph. So I think there's something interesting in that, and I'm curious to see where that goes.
Yeah, totally. And it seems like the ideas that we're thinking about here is just like, okay, integrate like Farcaster social graph into that front end or into that experience, basically, and build with it. I agree, like Farcaster channels have been out of control over the last, I don't even know how long, a couple of months or whatever it's been, but so many experiments, people spinning up. Great. I mean, it's with something like Hire, for example, people are making the point that it's kind of like a new model for DAOs, obviously building on top of like Party and stuff, and it spins up a group chat. You can essentially have an initial raise into a shared group wallet if people just buy the NFT to join, but then, you know, it's all the sort of DAO, it's like light DAO tooling is all there out of the box. Mm-hmm. Across
and Nouns Builder is the same thing, just from a different angle, but it's nice that there's so many different ways for people to, you know, to set up clubs on chain today.
Yeah, totally. So I'd like to ask you about something as well.
Sure.
You know, how have you guys been finding since the launch of like Yellow Collective and all that kind of stuff? And I think super interesting for you guys to kind of like be jumping in and using like Nouns Builder for this as well. Yeah. I think it's like been kind of surprisingly super fresh kind of feeling of like a new Nouns thing happening, which has been cool.
Yeah. Well, when we were doing a lot of thinking, and we did do a lot of thinking before launching Yellow Collective, like probably more than a year that we were planning it before we actually ended up launching it. One of the things we thought a lot about was, you know, does the world need another Nouns derivative, or is there a demand for another Nouns extension? Because in 2021 and 2022, there was such an explosion of projects, you know, using the IP in different ways. And we worried, like, is there a certain level where like even Nouns, diehard Nouns fans are going to be like, I just don't have it in me to buy another Nouns project or to buy into another Nouns project, even if they love Nouns, you know? And so we thought about that. And that's part of the reason why we chose like a very specific niche to focus on, in our case, you know, on-chain creators and kind of specific to the super chain, specific to Base, so that we would be also targeting like a new audience of people who might be like Nouns curious, but wouldn't consider themselves like dyed-in-the-wool Nouns fans. And I think that intentionality has really paid off for us, because if you look at our membership to date, there's actually not like a whole lot of overlap between people who own you know, previous Nouns projects, including Nouns and the Yellow Collective. Most of the people who have been joining are people who are super excited about Base. They're either like Base heads or Base builders. Right. They're Farcaster natives. There are people who are really into the Optimism Collective. These are the types of people that tend to be joining. And, you know, we do have some people from Nouns, of course, like Pat Yu and Brennan and some other folks who have been supporting us, which is amazing. And this isn't a comment on like whether people from Nouns should or shouldn't join the collective. It's just kind of awesome that you can like leverage the IP, you can leverage the protocol in the sense of like using Nouns Builder and actually bring new people into, you know, into the Nounish ecosystem in a way that kind of bridges two communities. I guess that's the long answer to the short question, but I don't know if that answers what you were kind of getting at, but.
No, it totally does. Also curious, why Yellow?
The story about Yellow. Well, we chose Yellow for a few different reasons, a couple different inspirations. One is right behind me here, you can see Nouny Clock, the mascot of the Noun Square. So I founded the Noun Square Media Collective almost 2 years ago now, and this has been our logo since the beginning. We wanted to choose from one of those two colors, either like the scarlet sort of rose of the noggles on the TNS logo or the yellow. And the reason why we went with yellow is a couple reasons. One, we looked at the emojis. We wanted, you know, we think every club needs a really good meme. And we looked at the emojis and we saw that, you know, Base was using the blue emoji and Optimism was using the red emoji. And at the time, PGN was using the green emoji. And people were sort of starting to claim up these circle emojis. And we were like, no one has yellow yet. We should just call ourselves the Yellow Collective and grab that yellow emoji. And this was in July. This was in July of 2023. And I already gave Jesse shit for this when he came on our pod, but like a week later after we kind of internally decided on Yellow Collective, On-Chain Summer comes out and they use the yellow circle for everything, which was kind of hilarious. But also at the same time, since we were planning to launch on Base, it felt kind of serendipitous as well. And so that's kind of how we landed on Yellow Collective. And the only other thing I want to mention too is that we also drew a lot of inspiration from Purple DAO and what they had done for the Farcaster ecosystem. And we wanted to do something similar for artists and creators on chain. And so we also, it was kind of like a very subtle nod to like what Purple's done to call ourselves yellow. So
yeah,
that's the story on yellow.
I really dig that. And I, you know, I can say me and Ivano, like when we're jamming on stuff or whatever, like we're also aware of this thing with the colors. And yeah, I joined Purple some while back as well, so like vibe with that to like the Purple app feel. But I can share that UFO is silver. That's where we kind of landed with that. I don't know if there's a silver emoji, but we also have the UFO emoji, which is very useful.
That's right. You just need one. It's all good. UFO is also a pretty good one.
Yeah, it is super good. And now with things like 747 Air, like the crash project that Sursu is doing.
Yeah.
So there's kind of this play between like airplanes and a UFO or higher in a UFO is kind of working pretty well. So
yeah,
kind of like that vibe. Also Scene Infra, this new project that's coming out from basically, it's like the FWB product team spinning out and they have this new thing called Scene Infrastructure.
Scene?
And I think like they are
S-C-E-N-E?
Scene, S-C-E-N-E, I think. Let me get it right, because they claim like three colors.
That's not fair, guys. You're only allowed one.
We thought that was good. Yeah, they're like red, green, and blue. So they kind of have these like three little dots. So I thought
this
that
is
was
interesting.
Cool.
Is this like, are we watching like the evolution of the flag, like the on-chain flag via emojis?
Yeah,
I mean, like flags have like traditionally been how clubs have identified themselves. And it's interesting that, you know, that really feels like people making use of emojis is like their own like on-chain flag.
Yeah, like Seed Club always had the little seedling emoji too, which was cool. There's been many for sure.
But all you need for a good club is a good emoji. You just need a good emoji and then a weird little guy and you're good to go.
That's true. We don't have a weird little guy yet.
We don't have one yet either, but we're working on it.
Someday.
I mean, yours is kind of easy, right? It's going to be some kind of a weird little alien guy, I think.
We have some kind of cool projects in the works. Like we're thinking about some interesting art projects and things. Like, we're very much going to go do the radio station first. Yeah, a couple of things we're doing for fun. I think we're doing UFO skateboards with Ben Bodie, has like boards.wtf.
Yeah, Ben's so the homie. He's really involved here at TNS. So love boards.wtf.
I also, funnily enough, like created the skateboarding channel on Farcaster somehow. Like, it wasn't taken. I'm a skater or whatever. Or I love skateboarding. So we thought, well, that's fun. We can spin that up and create that. So I think we're helping to do like a skateboarding side event or meetup during FarCon down at like Venice Skate Park. Friends from the park are coming down. Apparently they know some legendary pro skaters or something. So it might be a whole thing.
Got to get Bob Burnquist, the Nowner there. See if he can make it.
For real. Yeah, for real. One day. But yeah, so we're making these boards and I don't know. We're going to be hanging around with, I'm trying to think. I think we're collaborating with some events with like the park and other friends and stuff. So yeah, it'll be nice.
Very cool. Well, we talked a little bit about Farcaster a couple times already, but I would love to double click on that a little bit and maybe just chat a little bit about Farcaster and how it's kind of blown up as a, you know, 3 year in the making overnight sensation for people from the outside looking in. Obviously, I've been on Farcaster for a while. You've definitely been on Farcaster for a while as an OG. What's it been like to sort of see it gain mass adoption or at least some sort of mass adoption? And what are you excited about for the future?
Yeah, super interesting. I mean, from the beginning, it was kind of super compelling for the people that were there early, the kind of like DM Dan Romero on Twitter to get the early invites and stuff. And you show up and it's like all these really key builders from crypto Twitter and things like that. And I'm sure like conversations and discourse was like pretty different back in the earlier times and whatnot. But it's just all accelerated as, I mean, the Farcaster team or through Warpcast and whatnot, just like now like infamous for like shipping on Fridays and all these like game changing updates that have been like dropping in succession over the last couple of months and stuff. I think, you know, I mean, I'm not original in saying this in any way, but you know, a lot of people, you know, feel very positively for the way that they kind of build in the open, do stuff messy. And then like this whole network of people can kind of help make the stuff work and just like constant feedback and like they really ship quickly. And so I think the product has, and then when you see like, you know, the product colliding with something like Zora and these other things and people building collaboratively or with nouns or all these different things, it's like some kind of hyper accelerator for what's going on. You compare that to like early Instagram being like, okay, like we're creating this. It's I think what was Instagram originally like it wasn't a dating app or something. It was something really banal. And then they're like, oh, people like the camera photos. Filters, actually. Yeah. Like, oh, actually, we're a photo app. It was something like, it was originally like finding restaurants or something.
Oh, you know, I didn't know that. Like that. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so I think it's on what's it called? Masters of Scale, Reid Hoffman podcast. And he's talking with one of the Instagram founders. And so in the early days, like it exploded so quickly because people started being able to like early users could create like photos on Instagram that came with a sort of Polaroid looking little Instagram frame thing. They'd be sharing it on Facebook and people were like, oh, what's that? How do you make that? So like Instagram was just exploding like that. And I think, you know, but that's still like centralized company product team building it and blah, 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 blah. Whereas Farcaster, by being like this open protocol and everything and all these different teams like building on it all together and improving it and whatnot. And it's kind of, you know, it's sort of realized a bit of the vision for like before, like in previous cycles, it's like people hang out on crypto Twitter, but they're also in like a Telegram chat where the real stuff is going down and this and that. And so,
but they're not linked. Like, they're like, you know, they're linked insofar as like you had to get in someone's DMs on Twitter and get the invite to the Telegram. So your social graph is actually not linked in any way.
Yeah. So like years ago, especially if you're newer to the space, it's like by the time you're finding out that stuff is happening, it's kind of already happened and people are kind of moving on or whatever. But with Farcaster, the culture is that it's all happening in the open, like live in real time for the most part.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting element of the debate when people were talking about how Farcaster was different than Twitter, especially when Farcaster kind of really blew up on crypto Twitter maybe a month ago. And there was a lot of talk over there on, oh, what's the big deal? You know, this is the next failed social network, blah, blah, blah. And when people like DC Investor were talking about, you know, the importance of an open social graph, I think a lot of people missed the point. And it's not about like, you know, you go and you sign up for Warpcast and then you have to sign up again if Warpcast closes or whatever. It's more about the fact that like once you've signed up for Farcaster, now you can sign in with Farcaster on any number of other apps and your social graph comes with you. Whereas, you know, Twitter doesn't want you to do that and YouTube doesn't want you to do that. They want you to stay in the app. They don't even want you to link to another app, let alone take your social graph with you. And that's the real unlock, I think.
Yeah. So of course, like we're talking about Farcaster here, but like it's applicable for various crypto products like Paragraph as a blogging platform, for instance.
Yep, we've been using it a bit.
What's the big like sort of Web2 publishing platform?
I'm trying to think. Slack or Substack?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So with Substack, I know Water and Music, the amazing music research collective project. But, you know, they got tripped up by this because, you know, if you have like a large subscriber base on Substack, you can't export it and take it with you. You're locked
right?
into
by design.
Same with, by design. Same with Patreon, all those things. So with something like Paragraph, like you can import your subscribers into it, boot up on day one, bring them with you. But you can also export it and take it anywhere else, which can become quite useful if you export your subscribers and then you can, for instance, I mean, through Paragraph, you can do this as well, but message people through XMTP. Or allow them to access like some kind of release or all this type of thing. But the other point with, okay, Farcaster, open social graph and all that type of thing is like, I mean, over the last year or two, essentially Elon took over Twitter and it's no longer what it was before. Like, as you know, I have a journalism background and things. So it's kind of in mind that, I don't know, over a decade ago, Twitter really was this like public square where we saw things like the Arab Spring and things, because people could coordinate in real time, share information about what was happening on the ground in various like areas and whatnot, right?
And now that's
people
happening
really
on TikTok.
Communicate. Sure, exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, so that kind of stuff got like taken off the board for Twitter, which I think is like quite nefarious, you know, and against like, I don't know, internet freedoms or this kind of thing.
Do you think so that's just from like algo tweaking? Is that how that's been suppressed? Because you're right, I don't like, see that stuff anymore. But
yeah, it just doesn't totally. It's algorithm stuff, it's like shadow banning stuff. I don't know if it was like true or not, like once Elon took over Twitter and they're discovering all this stuff of like, we're going to promote Democrat politician tweets and we're going to suppress Republican stuff or blah, 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 you know. And when they came in, they're like, oh, we see how Twitter's been operating this before, right?
Because
if you think like a decade ago, like, or the algorithm favored people who were like a tenured professor at Harvard or all the, it was like, you know what I mean? There was sort of like an intelligentsia kind of metric that was applied or all this type of thing. Whatever the algorithm is now, like it's changed. And like I go on Twitter and it's nothing but a feed of some of the worst content I've ever seen. It's just like, here's like a fatal hit and run, or here's a guy holding up like a store with a gun and then he gets like shot by the police.
I don't even do the For You page, man. I have noties on for so many people that I actually want to listen to, and that's basically it if I ever go to Twitter at all. Yeah,
but then if we look at it like, okay, like over a decade ago people could use this, coordinate in real time, share information during like a disaster situation. I come from Australia with like bushfires and floods and like really crazy situations going on. But now that doesn't work anymore, so people use like WhatsApp or Telegram messaging or other ways, like Twitter
or again like TikTok. I saw it this weekend with the terrible tragedy with the bridge, and you know, the entire feed became, you know, consumed with videos from all angles of this thing and people coordinating and talking. And you're right, that would have happened on Twitter in the past.
Yeah, so that's pretty...
Not saying TikTok's blameless or anything, but they have sort of taken some of that niche away, though.
Totally. And there's a whole other conversation of like, who knows how the internet or those spaces are going to behave in like upcoming like election cycles or various stuff that's coming. Obviously, like there's an election coming up in the US and that's the whole thing. But again, like reflecting back on Farcaster and these like next generation internet protocols, I think of like Network State, Balaji and all those guys and what they're talking and thinking about. And I know like Dan Romero spoke during the event that we went to here in Amsterdam for Network State or whatever. But people thinking You know, so you kind of have like these like tech people based out of California and whatnot that are kind of like, it's almost like technology to exit or like create an alternative. And that's a lot of how I see Farcaster basically. And there's all these wild experiments and meme coins and degen stuff going on. And because I mean, crypto Twitter very much arrived on Farcaster in the last month, which I think has been pretty epic and healthy to see. But it's kind of, it's a wild experiment, but at least it's not being controlled by some kind of like black box of like that determines what content can be discoverable or not.
And the API is open, right? And that's the other thing about Twitter too, is like, despite, yeah. I mean, on top of any of the changes to the algorithm, it's also just like nerfing the API and making it so that like, I've literally had devs talk to me and say, I won't like ask them about integrating things with Twitter. And they're like, no, I just won't touch the API anymore. Right. It's too difficult. Yeah. Like if builders feel that way about your product, like you've lost, unfortunately, you've lost the game at that point, in my opinion. Like, and that's, it's crazy. The lead that these Web2 companies have blown, because like Twitter and Reddit started on the backs of this developer energy. If you were there in early days of Twitter, and even more so in early days of Reddit, they thrived on that early developer energy, and people were building interesting sites, and Twitter was allowing that because they knew that it was good for the product, and Reddit was allowing that because they knew that people were signing up for Apollo and all these other apps. And then they both, you know, just shot themselves in the foot by tightening those APIs to, you know, to the point where they were unusable. And
But like you've identified something super key, because like they did that so that they could IPO and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, you saw there was I think it must have gone through the court, or because the people challenged it, but it was like the creator of Wall Street Bets channel essentially had the channel or the IP like just taken off them by Reddit, basically. Because Reddit is sort of looking to wrap up and package all the IP created across all their various channels. Obviously, Wall Street Bets is a super famous like brand at this point. I think that's super interesting.
That's what makes me super excited about, you know, DAOs and on-chain clubs and the way that we can try to do things differently. Because I do think that like over corporatization of everything has led to like the death of a lot of creative energy. And I think you just put your finger on it right there, like where companies that, you know, started out as like really innovative, you know, game changing technologies just eventually end up being like all buttoned up and closed just so that, you know, the shareholders, my shareholders can make, you know, can be happy with an IPO. I don't know where I was going with that thought, but I just think it's kind of a sad outcome for like the American dream to see that like all this creativity just gets like buttoned up and packaged up for, you know, for Wall Street instead of on the crypto side, on the on-chain side, where, you know, we're in the arena trying things and thinking of different ways, you know, that that creativity can still flourish within organizations.
I'm trying to remember like the title of a book that this is all making me think of, like spiraling all the way back to like first times in crypto or whatever. Have you read or heard about this book, The Starfish and the Spider?
No.
This was, I mean, like early days of when I was getting into crypto, which was not like the early days as we established before.
Earlier than most.
But I'm trying to think. I was like, what's his name? Antonopoulos, talking about Bitcoin and all that type of thing is like unreal. It holds up, you know. I can recommend checking some of that stuff out. But also this book, The Spider and the Starfish. So talking about decentralized organizations and how they kind of just win almost in an evolutionary kind of way. And an example that stayed with me was the concept of Alcoholics Anonymous and AA. So essentially that was like a model and a format that was created. There was a creator of it, right, who developed it. And then essentially it's an open source thing. Like anyone, the whole idea is that anyone can spring up their own meeting and it sort of populates like this. And so like when you open up things, there's a way that it spreads compared to you have a centralized entity like a spider with a little like, it's kind of, it doesn't flow in the same way. I think that's what we're seeing across like the on-chain ecosystem in general. I'm not surprised that it's accelerating and seems to be winning because it just makes more sense.
Do you think that that decentralization and that freedom, that open source movement is so much more, you know, promising than any of the closed alternatives that you see in traditional media and traditional finance? And that's what gets me super excited is when you see a company like Farcaster, which is like deliberately making everything open and being like, you know, come at me, bro. Like, if you think you can do it better, you know, here's the social graph. You think you can build a better Warpcast? I hope you can, you know, go for it. And just like, I mean, those companies just win. They just do, I think.
There's also just astonishing advantages that are sitting here as well. For one thing, you know, there's entities like Optimism and stuff providing like all these retroactive grants and like, you know, builder grants going forward, or We Love the Art contest just happened and stuff like this. So, you know, building and developing in this space, there is potential for builders to be rewarded. Before we're talking about like PurpleDAO, supporting like builders on Farcaster, in the in-between phase, as well. But I think all of that being here as well is like a crazy opportunity. I mean, they just announced the next round of retro grants running over the next through the next 6 months or whatever. So years ago, you have all these like product teams or people spinning up ideas out of a hackathon. I think like that's how Uniswap started, I think, like stuff like that. And you would have these projects that would need to seek, you know, investment rounds or VC funding or all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, through like Gitcoin was a major precursor to all of this stuff as well. And like funding public goods, as they framed it, and open source tech in general. It's like, how do you incentivize people to build open goods, which in themselves are not necessarily profitable per se, right? So I think with all of that going on as well, I don't know, it feels like the switch is happening, basically.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think you kind of just touched on that point too about like, you know, blockchains are profitable, at least most of them are. Ethereum is profitable, very profitable. Mm-hmm. And being able to tap into those sequencer fees, whether it be for the OP stack or what have you, to fund public goods, including, I think on-chain media is a public good, one that often gets overlooked. But I think it totally is, because if you can, you know, make content, especially educational content, it's, and especially if you give it away for free. And in our case, like our podcast is called Zero Rights Reserved. It's CC zero completely. It's non-excludable. You know, it's non-rivalrous. Anyone can use it. Anyone can change it. I think that that's like the definition of a public good. And so if we can use those sequencer revenues to like, you know, help fund people like me and you who are in the arena trying to teach people how to live on chain, that's an interesting future, I think, rather than being beholden to advertisers or what have you, which there's nothing wrong with that model inherently, but you know, there are some certain conflicts that may arise, right?
Yeah, it's super true. And it fits across various categories, like not only media. I was just recording with Latasha, who was like head of community at Zora, and built like Zoratopia, and now spun out of Zora as Topia. She's building in that direction. But, you know, we were talking on a recent UFO episode about, you know, I mean, like music is one of those things that everyone knows that it's broken on the internet. The music industry has always been completely rigged against artists, famously forever, all the way since the beginning. You know, and like anyone can tell you like, yeah, I get it. Like artists don't get paid from Spotify streams and stuff like that. So everybody knows. But I'm really inspired by, I mean, We Love the Art just happened. A bunch of artists like received a bunch of like OP through that.
Yeah, my friend Leo Pastel won a prize there. Oh, amazing. I don't know if you know Leo. Leo's amazing.
Yeah, he's on UFO recently as well.
Oh, sick.
He's a friend. Yeah, it's just like one of those things where a whole bunch of artists can be supported and you never know what it is. Like, they get a grant for like, also there's a collective in Barcelona called Oval. And they entered like a music video that was made collaboratively with their collective of people like sharing a bunch of videos from around Barcelona that they'd filmed, bring it all together with a track, released it. They won a prize. And then now they can go and like actualize this like music collective and community and make a whole bunch of stuff happen. You know, it's like most of the time you only need a little bit of like financial backing to go and make a record or create an event or like make culture happen. And, you know, Nouns has been doing this for a long time as well, making stuff happen. I'm generally in favor of that. And altogether, like, it seems to me like crypto and the general on-chain movement is like a manifestation of the counterculture. From the jump, like UFOs being named for that, we see ourselves like in that tradition of stuff that's been going on. But, you know, the things that are happening here in this movement are like super punk, whether it's open tech and all this kind of stuff. And that's why when you start traveling around to like hackathons and meetups, connecting with people on Farcaster, just like straight up, a lot of it is a super punk energy, people creating really, really cool stuff, building collaboratively. And, you know, I find it like a really inspiring community and industry to be a part of, basically.
That's one of the things that drew me into Nouns, and also more broadly, you know, some of the other communities too, like the base community and others. But just that positive sum mindset, that collaborative mindset, is so different. You know, I've been an entrepreneur pre-on-chain for 2 decades, and I've had many different businesses in the meat space, and it's always so competitive, right? Which is, you know, not inherently bad or anything. And I'm not saying capitalism is bad, you know, but there's just like so much more that can be done in a collaborative mindset, you know, that where it can be so much more positive sum and everybody can win. And it's just, I wish people saw that more. And that's what sort of attracted me to Nouns, is that mindset of like, let's just all kind of build towards, you know, one goal together. And there's enough to, you know, to go around. I'd love to ask you about Nouns quickly, coming sort of someone like observing Nouns over the last, 3 years. What are your thoughts on the Nouns project, and what are Nouns doing right, and what could they do better?
Yeah, I've been super intrigued by it. I'm not a member of Nouns. I've been conscious of it from day one. You know, like I remember, you know, back when me and Ivano were jamming on stuff and I was living in Australia and stuff, like we were very aware of it and kind of watching it play out.
Why didn't you cop Noun one for 600 ETH?
I was going to say, cause I wasn't 600 ETH money. but I was about to say, like, I jumped in on a party for Noun 11, I think it was, or 13 or something. So it was the Noun with a little party hat. So I was rocking that for a while. And then someone or some like project or entity in the crypto space came and bought that Noun that people had bought through a party bid. So essentially we all like made some amount of profit on the split of the thing, and it was kind of okay, I guess like party hat comes off or whatever. But intrigued by it from the jump, because I mean, this was also in the era of like wild DAO experiments, and like Friends of Benefits was pretty early, and like all this great stuff was happening. Song Camp were doing all these experiments, and all the projects coming out from Seed Club and all those sorts of things we're interested in. So for Nouns, I thought it was interesting because, if my memory is right, it was something like Nouns was funded by like, prominent like CryptoPunk members who were pissed off when Yuga Labs bought CryptoPunks, I think.
Yeah. More well, or less. One in particular, like 4156 in particular. But yeah, there were other punks too in the midst. Yeah.
So intrigued by it from the jump of like, well, this is cool. They're like, right, we're going to spin up our own thing. And obviously everything they were doing with the format of like the daily auction and all that was like super innovative and new at the time as well, really interesting. And just this idea of like, well, this is the mechanism, and then, you know, you join to have a voting stake in how the treasury is deployed and all that kind of stuff was like super killer and interesting. So yeah, I've been watching it through the run. I've had various people on the UFO show talking about Nouns, like Jihad and Gami and various other friends. And I mean, it's been interesting to watch as well, because there was the kind of like the arbitrage trade situation that was going on, ultimately leading to the split of Nouns and all this type of stuff. But there's also like Nouns closing down their Discord. The kind of like, our community is not based in this, it's beyond this, was also kind of quite awesome and interesting.
Yeah, it ended up with many of us being early to Farcasters. So, you know, that worked out well.
Yeah. And like the way that, you know, like Nouns, helping to build out and fund tooling like Nouns Builder, which like set off a whole other kind of Cambrian explosion experiments and whatnot. And just intrigued by it as a mechanism and whatever, as a wild experiment and everything. I think I've picked up a couple sort of derivative Noun projects here and there. So yeah, always been intrigued by it. And to be honest, like, we also explored a nouns builder model for UFO back when, and we're thinking like, yeah, we're going to do this and whatnot. But sort of like following along the train of, I guess, design choices about how we wanted to do this thing, kind of didn't make sense for what we're trying to do. But otherwise, yeah, we're into it enough that we're looking to do that. I think Public Assembly had gone live around that time as well.
Yeah, Black social Hand, nouns, yeah,
stuff like that. Entropy, and all these other really cool projects. So, yeah, I don't know. The park,
I think, also started on.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I think all that stuff is really cool. And if we're talking about derivatives, like the park is a great example of like, now you can have a collective that shares music that's minted from the group wallet and comes back and splits.
It's dope.
All that kind of tooling for a creative and artistic collective is really killer. But then, you know, it also makes sense for BuilderDAO and other sort of like more developer-centric and those sorts of technology projects and things. So, yeah, but I mean...
And Yellow Collective was launched on Builder too. A lot of people don't know that, but we used their core technology to launch, so...
Yeah, I've been intrigued by it all. But as of like the future of nouns from here into the future, like you would know like much better than I potentially, like things that are in the pipeline or likely for the future.
Yeah, actually, I don't think I do know what's in the future, but that's kind of what I like about nouns. It's a giant experiment. You hit the nail on the head, and that's what I love. You never know who's going to bring an interesting proposal, and the values are emergent always. You never know what the DAO is going to want. So it is a very I've been involved with other DAOs, and like nouns is the only one that's like really not LARPing, you know. No, I shouldn't say the only one. I'm sure there's lots of other DAOs that are doing great, but of the ones I've experienced, nouns is the one that's really, you know, commuting on chain and like actually doing things on chain in a very Ethereum native way and just sort of figuring it out as we go, which is interesting.
Yeah, and it's cool to see like various of the nounders, you know, asking questions on Farcaster and just like floating things out there and kind of seeking feedback. And I mean, like nouns is always having like rounds of feedback and proposals and whatnot from people. And I mean, going to FarCon in a minute, we'll be dropping into like the Nouns Cafe that like Drew Kaufman and Derek, right? Was it those two guys, I think, are spinning up that thing and running a coffee shop out of LA, which I also think...
That's a great example of how you never know what's coming with Nouns. Like you don't know when someone's going to just put up a proposal to be like, we want to make a Nouns coffee shop. And that is like the secret weapon of Nouns, is that if you have like a corporation or like a boring hedge fund DAO, you can't do that shit, you know, because, you know, everyone's going to come and they're going to tear your proposal apart and ask what your 6-month ROI is going to be, and you just never get to that point. So keeping it weird is the secret power for nouns. You know, permissionlessness definitely is a double-edged sword, but it makes for some really interesting outcomes.
Yeah, it was like an interesting back and forth, like particularly when like the ARB trade kind of thing was starting to happen, like people wanted the rage quit function to be able to leave if they wanted to or whatever that was all about, and ultimately led to sort of a split in the treasury and they were able to withdraw or whatever that was all about. But there was also this sort of what appeared to me like a bit of a cultural rift between people who were like, we just want to go build like nounish type things or propagate that into the world or whatever. And then maybe another side that's like, okay, but you know, what's the ROI or what's good for, should this just be like an investment fund and we just lock all this up and we like make money collectively together or whatever it is. So
which is fine. And like, we don't have time to get into the fork on this conversation, but like, I will say that that's not how the DAO was founded. And I do think it's weird behavior for someone to join any kind of club or organization and then bring your own agenda for what you think that club should do and then try to like forcefully hoist that on the people that were there for a different reason from the beginning. That's what always like was really bad vibes to me about the whole ARB situation. It wasn't people who were like disillusioned with nouns for whatever reason. That's fine, and I'm glad they were able to leave and go on and do something else. But it was the people who were like, ooh, I have this like very financialized idea of what nouns should be, and I'm going to make it happen so I can make, you know, 32 ETH and then be on my way, just whatever, you know?
Yeah, so I guess that's like incentives, design and mechanics and whatnot. And, you know, not everything can just run on vibes and cultural norms when money is at stake and you can use open technology to kind of lock in and, You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, that's like fair. And it was a lesson, expensive lesson learned there. Okay, last question for you.
Totally.
I wanted to ask you, and I know this is probably like trying to pick your favorite child, but I wanted to ask if you have a specific favorite memory or favorite guest from your time doing the UFO pod.
Yeah, it's a crazy one. I've never been able to answer it well at all. A few I can throw to, like opening with Charlie from Extinction Rebellion were super cool. I did an episode with a friend of mine from Barcelona, Marty Ruiz, who's like an amazing experimental like sound artist and musician and stuff. And that was getting into like Spanish and folk music from the Iberian Peninsula and listening to this like experimental like sound installations that he'd made in Japan and all this craziness. I think a lot of great ones have been when we've had multiple guests on as well. Like I did an episode, like also it's kind of like, pretty much every time I get off a show, I'm like, I think that's the best one we've done. Like it gets,
that's good.
It feels like it gets better and better and better. Cause you're finding the format more and, you know, but you know, once we've done together with like Light and Rafa was really mm-hmm. great. Like you can kind of see
one. There was one with Jihad and Rafa too, wasn't there?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Sorry. What did I say? Did I get it wrong?
You said
I
Light. Said, yeah.
Yeah. My bad. So yeah, there was Jihad and Rafa together and it was like, you know, memetic icons and
yeah, that one kept me up. I was driving home from visiting
Casino on Mars. That's right. Yeah. You told me that.
Yeah,
kept me up. We could keep you on the road.
Yeah, I owe my life to UFO. You can put that in your next stinger.
Oh yeah, we can do that. Yeah, that's quite good. I'm trying to think, but yeah, it's like sometimes like episodes, you can tell that they hit. And again, like having multiple guests on can be a great way. I think it's can be nice for a conversation to be like that. We had an early one with like Salif and Niche and Max from Public Assembly a while back, and now they've all like gone on, they're, you know, building more various amazing things. That was a great one. We did the 50th episode recently with Light and Alex Guy from Zerion, who hosts Still Here on the UFO Network, and also Io, who's a key contributor at UFO as well. So is Light, actually. I mean, like Light's published, starting to publish a series as well. But yeah, that was quite interesting, having a kind of circular chat where we're kind of turning the lens back on UFO and go, okay, what are we doing actually? Yeah, and also there was one with Light and Gami that I thought was really killer. And also the original one that I did with Gami like over a year ago or something.
I feel like you just named all of the UFO episodes. I'm just kidding. There's so many like good ones.
But yeah, like the original one with Gami was really cool. But when Gami and Light, like they'd never met each other as well. So they met on the show, but they, you know, they'd messaged online, but they never had like a verbal conversation. And there were various things that we kind of explored together in that, such as the idea of, we discovered that all three of us have a background in skateboarding growing up. And so we're thinking about how your group of friends growing up skateboarding is kind of like a DAO in a way. Like someone needs a board, but they don't have money, like get them a board, or someone buys lunch for somebody else, or if someone's filming, everyone else is skating, blah, 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 all that stuff. And then we're thinking about like a skateboard is a memetic icon, skateboards like the same all around the world, blah, blah, blah. And what does that mean? And I think Gami came out with a phrase about like serendipity machines. Because I was talking about like Terence McKenna and ever accelerating novelty towards like the Omega at the end of time, right? He's talking about as we go forward in time, it's just ever increasing novelty in the world, which is pretty hard to argue against. I think we're seeing it constantly. And yeah, Gami got on this tilt about serendipity machines and sort of on-chain stuff of like how it surfaces and whatnot. And I know that inspired and intrigued Light in his creative practice as well, and all the amazing stuff that he does. Check him out.
And like hyperstructures as well. The
hyperstructures like yeah. LGHT.eth for his stuff on Zora. But it's stuff like that. It's like stuff that's happened on the show has kind of, we're all kind of learning and building together and sharing experiments and stories and experiences of how we, you know, went from here to there and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think, I mean, we set out to do a radio show basically, and now it's becoming this really crazy thing. And you know, we're sort of building on-chain lore. One last thing, like I'll mention before the end, was like Jihad posted on Farcaster like a week or so ago about how like UFO had helped to sort of document this whole on-chain culture movement and whatnot from 22 yeah. through to now, with over like 50 guests or whatever. But just like the collection of people that we had turned out to be a really surreal series of people and yeah. interrelated projects and whatnot. So, I mean, I think that's...
It's almost like on-chain anthropology in real time.
Yeah, I think so. Like it's sort of documentary style of thing. You guys are doing that work as well, and all these other amazing C Club podcasts, Chase Chapman on the other side.
Yeah, like, I love Chase.
All these amazing shows, like doing this work all together is kind of, yeah, building out this whole thing. And something that we have for UFO is sort of like the Virgil Abloh thing of like, everything we do is for the 17-year-old version of ourselves. Yeah. And I just imagine like being young and starting out, looking to discover what's happening and tripping into crypto and stuff. And like, you know, it's all these like really key pieces of like blog posts or podcasts or things that you can discover that kind of help you get onboarded and catch up to speed with what's going on. So
amazing. Well, I think you guys are doing,
that seems to be what we're doing.
I think you guys are doing an amazing job of that. I think your content is super evergreen, and I think you're right. I think a lot of people are going to be onboarded today and into the future by it. So keep it up.
Super appreciate it, man. I look forward to, sitting down again on the UFO show very soon.
The away game. I'm looking forward to it as well. I'm ready to get in the hot seat and answer all your pressing questions very soon.
Yes. We'll send you some spicy wings for the recording session.
I like spice, so you're going to have to go pretty hot if you want to get me off guard.
Interesting. Nice, man. Well, yeah, thanks right. for the invite. I really appreciate it. Anyone who's like made it all the way to the end of the thing, like, thanks for coming and hanging out with us, like talking about this. Super appreciate it. UFO.fm.
We're all Let's there. Go check it out. Amazing podcast. And I will see you on chain.